We're honoring Veterans Day with a story from Glenn Boyd. He's a World War II veteran who served in the Pacific Theater along with his two brothers. And his story comes to us from Thor Ringler, the director of a VA program called My Life, My Story. So here's Thor with Glenn's story.
Both my older brothers were in the Army Air Force in World War II. My brother Ken was a C-47 pilot, and my oldest brother Bob was a radio operator on C-54s. We were all born and raised in McFarland, Wisconsin. I was drafted while I was still in high school because I started school a year late. On December 1, 1943, I was inducted into the Army Air Force in Milwaukee, Wisconsin. They transferred me to Fort Sheridan, Illinois for processing, and then on to Jefferson Barracks, Missouri for basic training. We were moved to a couple different air bases after that and ended up in Camp Anza, California. From there, we shipped out to India, but we didn't know it at the time. It was a long trip. We were on a troop ship with 5,000 soldiers. We stopped at Melbourne, Australia, and then sailed through the Indian Ocean to Bombay. From there, we took a train to Calcutta. We then boarded a riverboat, a two-stacker, stern-wheeler, and sailed 900 miles up the Brahmaputra River to Dibrugarh, India. We went by train from there to Dinjan, India, where there was an Allied airbase. When I landed in Bombay, I got a letter from my mother that said my brother Ken was in India flying C-47s. At Dinjan, there were two C-47 groups. So the next morning, I told my buddy Tex, this is a good place to start looking for my brother. I was in the 11th Combat Cargo Squadron, and I asked my first sergeant if he knew Lieutenant Boyd. He said, yeah, he's in the 10th Combat Cargo Squadron, which was right across the road. I started to walk over there, but had to wait for a truck that was loading up some guys. I went inside and asked some of the pilots, do any of you guys know Lieutenant Boyd? They said, yeah, he was on that truck out there. So I went back out and got a ride with a driver who knew where the truck was going, 10th Operations. I walked in. Do you know Lieutenant Boyd? He just went out the door. In fact, that's his airplane sitting right there. So I went out and asked the radio operator, do you know Lieutenant Boyd? And he said, yes, he's on the airplane. So I went up and poked my head between my brother and the co-pilot. Believe me, it was unbelievable. For the first 3 weeks, I flew with him every day, three missions a day. There were no roads into Burma at that time, and General Slim of the British forces needed 100 planes to support his troops that were fighting there. Our job was to drop supplies to those men on the front lines. I was trained as a cook, but the guys who kicked supplies out of the airplanes were volunteers. The kicker's job was so hazardous that they only took volunteers. But you also made $50 each time you did it. That was a lot of money back then. We had to fly. Sometimes when we took off, it was so foggy that you couldn't see the hand in front of your face. But when we got up to 300 feet, the fog was below us. We would fly due east, into storms, or whatever there was. You still flew. We didn't fly over the mountains. We flew between them. And when we got there, we would fly low, just above the treetops, so we could drop the supplies. When there was fog, we'd head back to the mountains where the fog was lifting and slip down between the fog and the trees. And the thing is, we're right on the treetops, flying at 150 to 175 miles per hour. If the trees go up into the clouds, you went up into the clouds too and came back again. That's how important that stuff was. They had to have it. We were dropping mortar shells, and they were taking them right out of the containers and firing them. We were flying just above the treetops, right over the Japs. We lost a lot of airplanes, a lot of them. In October of 1944, we get a letter from my oldest brother, Bob, that he was in India too. With some help from the mailman, we found out that he was in Dhaka, India, which is now the capital of Bangladesh. There were two airfields there, and one of them flew C-54s into China. On January 17, 1945, Ken's commanding officer supplied an airplane for us to fly 400 miles west to Dhaka to visit my brother Bob. We three brothers spent about 45 minutes together. When the atomic bombs were dropped on Japan, we heard that no one would be able to walk on the ground for 100 years. On September 1st, we ended up in Shanghai. It was the day before the Japanese surrendered. Nobody knew what was going to happen. It was all guesswork. But we took over their barracks and released their prisoners. I stayed in Shanghai until December 15, 1945, when I came home. There's a bus trip for veterans that is going to Washington in a couple days. I was planning on going, but I'll just be getting out of the hospital then. My brother Bob passed away about 12 years ago. We were all young kids back then. My brother was 24. I was just 20. That's why we did it, because nobody knew any better. We were young. It's just like what the young kids do today. They're not crazy. They're just young. Yeah, it was a great life. Out of the depression and into the frying pan. But we made it.
That's Glenn Boyd's story, read by Thor Ringler. Thor has heard hundreds of stories like that because he directs a project called My Life, My Story at the VA hospital in Madison, Wisconsin. The idea is to interview veterans, collect their life stories, which then become part of their medical record, so that when the vets come in for treatment, doctors and nurses can read their stories and know more about them. But Thor says it turns out that for the veterans themselves, telling these stories is therapeutic. So for Glenn,
yes,
what did it do for him, do you think, to tell that story? I mean, did he seem any different after having told it?
Well, he definitely had a twinkle in his eye when he was telling the story and was closely watching my reaction, which was my jaw kept dropping because the story went in places that I never would have imagined. And so I think part of it was the telling. He was a good storyteller. And so he was watching my response and was amused by that. But I think the other thing that I noticed is that as the interviewer, you feel like you're back there at the time of these experiences, especially for a story like that, where it's a very clear story with a very sharp focus. And you are sort of being brought back by the grace of this person to this time in their lives. And it's a very special kind of gift, I would say, from them, not only to me as the interviewer, but also to the people who read the story in the future.
So when you're, wow, so what is that like for you then, to be sitting there listening to these stories? It sounds like for you, it almost feels like you're there with them.
It does. Sometimes it very much does feel like that, yes, yeah. And I think that's the wonderful part of the whole process is doing the interview.
You must have gone to some dark places with people then.
Yes.
I mean, what kind of stories have you heard?
So I've heard terrible stories from my civilian point of view. I haven't served in the military myself. Terrible stories, I would say, of times in combat that people have been through and kind of the gut-wrenching things that they've experienced there. But I've also heard very gut-wrenching stories of people's childhood and what happened there. It's amazing to me what people will share. And because I think our role is really a witness and a listener, we don't give a lot of feedback to our people mm-hmm. when we're talking to them. We let them talk and we try to let them be with whatever they're feeling at the time. Sometimes that's a little awkward. I think the most difficult thing for me is learning to trust the silence when a person gets to a place when they don't talk. Mm-hmm. And I've sat in a room for 3-4 minutes waiting for them to get to the next place.
That is hard.
And I think if you can do that, that's often those moments are really the heart of the interview. Many of the people I interview have never been interviewed. This is the first time. And this is the first time they've reflected on their life in that way.
Do you think it's easier for them to go into those memories and tell some of those stories because they don't have a relationship with you? You know,
definitely.
They don't have to take care of you. You're
right.
Not a spouse or
right.
a grandchild or a child.
I think that's a critical part of it. I think the anonymity of the relationship, it creates a space where that can happen because they don't feel like they have to take care of you. I've had a lot of veterans share things, say that they're telling me things that they never would tell their family.
Really?
Yes.
Like what?
Well, experiences in war particularly, a lot of vets don't want to burden their family with the ordeal that they went through because they feel like it will be adding a burden to them to know that they suffered.
Do you think it's healing for them to tell these stories?
I think it is. I do think it is. I think it's healing to reflect on your life in a spontaneous way. Most of the people we interview haven't had a chance to think about what their answers are going to be. So they're really processing on the fly, if you will, their life. And and I can see that during the interview. I can see it sort of behind their eyes, in their pauses, in their silences, in what they talk about, that they're thinking, well, what's important to me? What really mattered? You know, what is it that's important in my life that I want to communicate with other people? So it's a very active and engaged process.
Thor Ringler is the director of My Life, My Story at the VA Hospital in Madison, Wisconsin. The project has collected more than 500 veteran stories so far. It's expanding this year to 6 other VA hospitals in Iowa City, Reno, Asheville, Topeka, the Bronx, and White River Junction, Vermont. And before we go, the last word in this hour goes to another veteran, Brian Turner. He served as an infantry team leader with the 3rd Stryker Brigade Combat Unit in Iraq, where he wrote this poem by flashlight.
Night in blue. At 7,000 feet and looking back, running lights blacked out under the wings and America waiting. A year of my life disappears at midnight. The sky, a deep viridian. The house lights below, small as match heads burned down to embers. Has this year made me a better lover? Will I understand something of hardship, of loss? Will a lover sense this in my kiss or touch? What do I know of redemption or sacrifice? What will I have to say of the dead, that it was worth it, that any of it made sense? I have no words to speak of war. I never dug the graves in Tal Afar. I never held a mother crying in Ramadi. I never lifted my friend's body when they carried him home. I have only the shadows under the leaves to take with me, the quiet of the desert, the low fog of Balad, orange groves with ice forming on the rinds of fruit. I have a woman crying in my ear late at night when the stars go dim. Moonlight and sand as a resonance of the dust of bones and nothing more.
Night in Blue by Brian Turner.